Welcome to the Versus History Podcast with your hosts, Patrick O'Shaughnessy, Connell Smith, and Elliot Watson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this episode of the Versus History Podcast. It's your host, Patrick O'Shaughnessy, History Chappie, and at Versus History on social media. Today, I am joined by a very special guest, someone who is immensely knowledgeable about one of my favourite games and about one of the world's most popular sports. It's Rakesh Pathak, who is an expert on cricket. Rakesh, thank you so much for joining us today on the Versus History Podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
We absolutely love sports. We've done various podcasts on sports, including Gaelic football in the past. So it's a real opportunity for us to uncover some, maybe some forgotten or unknown gems about the history, as I said, of one of the world's most famous sports. So Rakesh, would you mind, just to get things going, to get the proverbial ball rolling, tell us about you, why you love cricket so much, how you got into the game, and your recent e-publication on cricket.
Yes, well, I think probably my interest in cricket comes from my background. My father's from India, my mum's from England. Both sides of my family have always been very interested in cricket. So it's one of the things growing up, and that's able to kind of the two halves of my background, parentage, identity, if you like, could come together. I've also found, as I've got into history teaching, that a lot of very good historians have written on cricket. And one of the things I started to do during lockdown, we've all been kind of going through periods of lockdown recently, is I thought I will put pen to paper, proverbially, and see what I can come up with in terms of kind of getting to grips with the meaning of English cricket, the soul of English cricket, if you like. And I've put together a little e-publication, which I've been using to try and raise a bit of money for UK food banks in these troubled times.
Really pleased to hear that you share my passion and the passion of so many of our listeners for the beautiful game. Okay, then. This is a curveball just to get us going, because I'm just aware that there may be people listening that have never watched a game of cricket, Rakesh. There'll be few, I'm sure, but there may be some. What is cricket in a nutshell?
Okay, in its essence, Patrick, it's a fairly simple game of bat and ball. For your American listeners, it's not a million miles away from baseball. Somebody with a bat, somebody with a ball. The main difference maybe between baseball and cricket at a very basic level is the ball can bounce in cricket when it can't in baseball. And that maybe adds an extra layer of complexity to the game. The other difference maybe with a game like baseball is it can be played across different time spans, ranging from a game that has no time limit, that was the kind of game that's played in the 1930s, down to a five-day match, down to a game that lasts maybe about 3 hours.
Thank you, Rakesh. Okay, so that everyone should be familiar now with the bare basics of the beautiful game. All right, then. The first question for you, Rakesh. Which English cricket player has had the biggest historical impact?
Okay, so if you're asking an academic historian, let's say, that they would probably pick a chap called W.G. Grace, who was probably the first nationally and internationally recognised player. So he's probably the chap in the Victorian era, the late 19th century, who turned the game from, you know, a semi-professional pastime into a national sport and an international sport. The player I'm going to pick, actually, is perhaps less well known. And he was, in the nomenclature of the time, he was called in apartheid South Africa a cake-coloured player. And he couldn't get any opportunities in 1960s South Africa because of the racial barriers that were in place. It's a chap called Basil D'Oliveira. And he came over to England in the early 1960s to play club cricket, and then he started to play for a local county, Worcestershire, and he eventually started to play for the England team. And his ambition was to go back to South Africa with a touring England team. And that tour was due to take place in the winter of 1968-69, and the apartheid government of the day said they would not welcome an England team with D'Oliveira in it. So that tour did not take place. And then 2 years later, the South African team, it was an all-white team at that time, did not tour England due to essentially protest by anti-apartheid activists in England. So I would say that the issues surrounding Basil Doivery, he's a very good player, very good cricketer in his own right, but the political ramifications of his selection non-selection, you know, actually had a huge impact on English society and actually the English game. I think it marked a real step forward for the English game, and also ultimately had an impact on South Africa as well. You know, the boycott of South African sports teams during the apartheid era, I think, played quite a big role in eventually leading to multiracial democracy in that country.
So interesting to hear that the impact of cricket goes far beyond the sport itself into politics, economics, culture and society. Thank you very, very much indeed. And incidentally, I was brought up in Beckenham, Kent, next to the cemetery where W.G. Grace is buried. The question I think many people around the world will want to know the answer to in regards to cricketing history. Why do all other cricket teams and nations care so much about beating England at cricket?
It's one of the things you kind of learn as an English cricket fan, that every other team will play 10% better when they're playing England. That is very much bound up with historical reasons. And really, it's the legacy of empire. That cricket, essentially in its kind of late Victorian Edwardian form, was really a cultural tool of imperialism. So as a way of fighting back against the British Empire, as a way of asserting national identity, national independence, and particularly, I would say, for non-white parts of the British Empire, if you could beat, you know, the imperial governing class at their own game, cricket, then what finer way of, you know, perhaps, you know, asserting one's identity and perhaps striking back against the British Empire. I'd say that sort of feeling has been particularly powerful in the Caribbean islands, in the West Indies. And, you know, and for that reason, cricket has become, I think, for countries like, you know, Barbados, Jamaica, India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, even Australia, crucial parts of shaping their national identity.
What is, in your view, given the historical trajectory, the future of English cricket? Asking the question here that historians dread, but what lies ahead for cricket in England?
Yes. Yeah, trying to predict the future. Always a very difficult thing to do for anyone interested in history. So I should start off with a little preamble to this answer, which is the demise of English cricket has been confidently predicted for the last 100 years. And yet the game seems to manage to kind of cut its cloth to fit changing societal circumstances, which I think in itself is really, really interesting. I think the biggest reason to be pessimistic about the future of English cricket, or test cricket, as we call it around the world, is the time element. That if you are a kind of purist, a traditionalist, as I'm afraid very much am, and I would see the five-day format of the game as the ultimate form of the game, in a 21st century world where there is such a premium placed on time, very few people now have 5 days to stop their normal lives and watch a game. You know, the kind of compartments of time that we work in this day and age are much, much shorter than that. Having said that, one of the interesting byproducts of the pandemic, I think, is suddenly we all have a bit, if we're isolating at home, as many of us are at the moment, we have a bit more time on our hands. I've certainly watched a lot more test cricket over the last year than I have probably in the previous 10 or 20 years. So the time element is one problematic area. I think if you look at participation rates, perhaps associated with the time that cricket takes, certainly in England, those participation rates are coming down. I think also cricket is perceived, often as quite an old-fashioned game. and sort of almost harking back to an old-fashioned, almost outdated sense of Englishness. A British Prime Minister in the early 1990s, John Major, was somewhat obsessed with cricket. He actually wrote a very good book about cricket. And, you know, when he was asked to sum up, you know, a sense of Englishness, he talked about cricket on the village green, people cycling on their bicycles to kind of Holy Communion on a Sunday morning at the village church, which is all perhaps rather old-fashioned. So the future of English cricket in the 21st century, with, based on what I've said, might then be seen to be, you know, slightly problematic, slightly uncertain. The reason I'm optimistic, having said all that, is that cricket's shown a great capacity to innovate and evolve. So currently, the most popular form of the game is now a 2020 version, which can be played in just under 3 hours. Also, I would say the South Asian diaspora, wherever it is, whether it's in America, in the UK, even in parts of Europe, takes the game with it. So the game is actually spreading, and its popularity is certainly still deeply, deeply rooted in the South Asian diaspora. And as long as that carries on, you know, in a country like the UK with a big South Asian community, I think the future of English cricket is actually pretty secure.
You mentioned John Major there. I remember as a very, very young man going to the Oval, because I'm a Surrey fan, seeing John Major there on a good few occasions. And you mentioned the South Asian diaspora when I worked in Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka, well, I mean, everybody eats and breathes and sleeps cricket. So thank you so much for that, Rakesh. Okay, the next question. Has, and if so, to what extent, has English cricket changed as English society has changed? And if so, is it causation, is it correlation, or a mixture therein? Take it away.
I think, Patrick, I'm probably going to hedge my bets on this answer. I think it's probably a bit of both. The metaphor I might use here is, I think cricket is a mirror for English society, or for any society, really, in which it's played. And I think you could probably say the same for lots of other popular sports, but certainly for cricket. So if we go back, 100 years, let's say, there was, that the key features of English society at the time would have been reflected in English cricket, and particularly differences of class. There were two types of cricketer 100 years ago in the Victorian era, amateur and professional. And the amateurs were more likely to be batsmen, to be the captains of the team. The other type of cricketer were the professionals. They would have been paid. They would have used separate dressing rooms, travelled separately, stayed in different hotels, even though they were members of the same team. And it took actually until the early 1950s for a professional, a Yorkshire batsman called Len Hutton, to actually captain the English cricket team. Before that, the captaincy of the team was an amateur only affair. So you can see going back in time, that perhaps the class divisions in English society are being reflected very much in the English game. So I think the way I think cricket has changed is, as I think class distinctions are still there in English cricket and in English society. A lot of English players still tend to come from middle class backgrounds, or perhaps to have gone to private schools. But I think compared with 100 years ago, perhaps the class distinctions are certainly less rigid. I think also, what today we'd call some of the racist characteristics of English cricket are certainly not there anymore. I still think it's still perceived from the outside as a slightly elitist game. I think sometimes a little bit unfairly so. So I'd say as English society, it's perhaps become a bit more egalitarian, a bit less class conscious. I think that's been reflected in English cricket.
Do you think that a knowledge of cricket can help us to better understand English and perhaps even global history?
Yeah, absolutely so. I think part of the reason I sat down to have a go at an ebook on this was I wanted to try and explore the relationship between cricket and Englishness, to almost, you know, try and get a handle on, okay, if you just look at English cricket and some players, can that tell us a bit about Englishness? And I think it can. And to be honest, I think you could do the same with any country's history. I know a number of your listeners are American, and actually, you could actually learn a lot about American history from the story of cricket in Philadelphia. Philadelphia had some excellent amateur teams and amateur clubs in the late 19th, early 20th centuries. They used to tour England, and the kind of Philadelphia cricket scene was actually, it's probably one of the kind of centres of the world game before World War I. But I think, not that I'm so much of an expert on American cricket as I am on English, sort of facet of the American game faded as perhaps the kind of, you know, the amateur ethos lessened in America, and perhaps sports became more professionalised. So going back to your question, Patrick, what can cricket tell us about English history? I think it tells us a lot, first of all, about how the English have seen themselves. That, you know, the English like to see themselves, you know, rightly or wrongly, as a nation that likes their sport, notions of fair play and fairness, I think are seen as quite important values in English society, and that's bound up with cricket. I think we can also see, as I've said in one of my previous answers, issues of class. That if you want to understand, you know, the kind of quite deep class distinctions in English society, certainly historically, I think cricket is an excellent way of just understanding kind of quite subtle class distinctions. I think some of the racial distinctions as well. I think cricket is bound up, as we've said, with the British Empire. I'd say to make two more points, if I may, that might just help us understand how cricket can help perhaps shine a light on some interesting areas of English history. One of the points I made in my ebook was about English attachment to place, and particularly our attachment to, if you like, the pastoral and the rural. Which might seem rather unusual. I mean, England was, you know, pretty much the first society in the world to industrialise, and therefore our society became more urban at an earlier date than in almost any other country in the world. And that, I think, has created a sense of nostalgia for a rural past. And obviously, you know, it is a game based on green fields, that, you know, the domestic structure of our game is based on counties, which very much have, most of them, a rural identity. So I think that's quite an interesting facet of the game, that it takes us back to a kind of imagined rural past, if you like. I also think that for a modern historian, certainly post-1945 historian, if I wanted to explore the experience of modern Caribbean and South Asian migrants to this country, now I think cricket is an excellent mirror for that. If I take and the Caribbean community. Almost the first time after the docking of the Empire Windrush, 1948, which is the kind of symbolic arrival of the kind of post-war Caribbean migration, almost the first moment that that migration becomes visible is actually on the cricket field in 1950. The visiting West Indies team won at Lord's, the home of cricket. There's a very famous calypso called Victory Test Match by Lord Beginner that celebrates that moment. And, you know, that's almost the first kind of, you know, really important national moment for British Caribbean migrants. You could fast forward to 1976. And again, a great West Indies team visited this country. And, you know, that series became, again, almost a mirror for some of the racial tensions that there were in 1970s Britain. How second generation Caribbean immigrants by that time, you know, were really struggling with, you know, relations with police and the, you know, in the job market, etc. And a lot of that was reflected on the cricket pitch that summer of 1976.
This question is an interesting one. Should historians be at all interested in cricket and its glorious, in my opinion, history?
Yeah, absolutely so. You know, I think particularly social historians, that as we've explored through the podcast so far, that, you know, just looking at some aspects of cricket can tell us a lot about societies of the past, which is, after all, the business of the historian. And actually, you know, there have been some very, very eminent historians that have taken a deep interest in the game. And if I may, I might just pick out a few examples. There's a great West Indian Marxist historian of the mid-century, chap called C.L.R. James, and who's written some brilliant books, particularly on the rebellions in Haiti against the French at the end of the 18th century. And in amongst other things, C.L.R. James has wrote probably perhaps the best cricket book ever. So if I was going to recommend one cricket book to your listeners, particularly with an interest in history, I would recommend a book called Beyond the Boundary by C.L.R. James. And he poses in that book a very interesting question. What do they know of cricket who only cricket know? So, and I think, you know, it's almost a rhetorical question, that the answer through the book is actually, if you think cricket is just bat and ball, and that's all there is to it, you are missing the wider context of the game, which particularly in the West Indies was deeply significant, bound up with nation building and kind of escaping the confines of the British Empire. So, you know, C.L.R. James would have, you know, was probably a really good example there of a historian deeply interested in cricket. A more recent example, one of my favourite historians of India is a chap called Ramachandra Guha, who has written some great books on kind of 20th century Indian history, you know, an acknowledged expert on Gandhi. And interestingly, he was actually appointed as an administrator of Indian cricket by the Indian Supreme Court in 2017. I'm trying to think of a parallel in England. It would be like an eminent English historian suddenly being appointed coach of the England cricket team or something. But he actually helped run Indian cricket for a year or 18 months or so. We've had a number of historians who've taken a deep interest in cricket. And I think, you know, what a historian can take from cricket is this idea of the mirror, that if you want to understand a society, and I think particularly societies in what I might call the nation building phase, as they kind of moved out of the orbit of the British Empire, and, you know, how cricket's know, being seen as a symbol of nation building. That, I think, has been very interesting for historians. The other thing I think historians have been interested in is how what's seen as such a quintessentially English game has taken a different form in different countries. So there's a really eminent Indian academic called Ashish Nandi, who's got a great line about how cricket is an Indian game accidentally discovered by the British, but actually in the Indian context, it's become culturally a very different game from the one perhaps played on the English village green. You could say that the form of the game played in Australia is again very different from the form of the game traditionally played in England. So for the historian, these things I think are very, very interesting, how cricket has been used you know, perhaps as a tool by nation builders, how it reflects some of the aspects of a particular society in which it's played.
Much appreciated. I have a couple of listener curveballs for you. Curveball number one, women's cricket. What do you see as the future for women in the paradigm of cricket? Obviously, it's taken off massively over the last sort of 10, 20 years. What do you see as the future there?
Okay, that's a really interesting question. I think the answer is actually, well, I think the future of women's cricket is, I think, amongst the most exciting aspects of the game we've got to look forward to. Cricket is, you know, unlike some other sports, very much a skill-based game. So, you know, compared with perhaps with a sport like rugby union or rugby league, you know, sheer kind of size and, you know, does not really matter. So in that sense, I don't see a reason why in 20 or 30 years' time you couldn't have mixed teams, that actually the England cricket team, you know, in 30 years' time, why couldn't it have, you know, be made up of, you know, six or seven women players and three or four male players? That may be the future of the game. Certainly the best England wicketkeeper I've ever seen is a female player, Sarah Taylor. So there are aspects of the game that I think, you know, we could see the male and female parts of the game coming together. I think it's been one of the unfortunate things about the pandemic that, you know, the female game was just beginning to take off. If we, you know, one of the last big games played before the pandemic really hit was in, I think last February, the final of the Women's T20 World Cup in Australia. And the Melbourne Cricket Ground had, you know, there was an 80,000 capacity crowd to see that game. I think T20 women's cricket is really taking off in a major way in India. If I just look at my own school, I've been teaching at Felsted School for about 15 years, and cricket's becoming a really popular sport amongst the girls. So I think overall, I think if we fast forward, Patrick, 30 or 40 years, I think, you know, perhaps we might get to a situation like tennis, where you've got almost kind of equivalence between the two, between male and female parts of the game.
Okay, this is a geographical curveball. Obviously, you've talked at great length about the connections between Britain's empire and cricket. There's one nation that probably stands out amongst the dominions that hasn't really taken to it as far as one of our listeners has outlined. Canada. Is there cricket in Canada? And I'm sure there is. But why historically, any idea why it doesn't probably loom as large as some other games? Is it climate? Is it culture? Any ideas, Rakesh?
Okay, I'm going to come up with a few theories, Patrick, if that's okay, to answer that question. So I think the first part of the answer would be Canada has qualified for the Cricket World Cup a few times. So, you know, it is perhaps slightly under the radar, Canadian cricket, but it is there. A lot of it powered, I think, by the Caribbean and South Asian diasporas in that country. So my theories as to why Canadian cricket hasn't taken off in the same way as perhaps you know, in other parts of the empire. I think I'm right in saying, Patrick, the oldest international fixture is actually the USA versus Canada. So there has been international cricket in Canada, and that they have qualified for World Cups. I wonder if it is that in Canada you've had perhaps quite large French-speaking communities historically. I think also quite large influx of immigrants from Scotland and Ireland, maybe for whom the game has been less important. And yeah, I think we'd have to factor in conditions of climate as well. I sometimes think that with England being as temperate and wet as it is, it's not the ideal game. It is a game that needs dry weather and sunshine, things we're not generally blessed with in England.
We are certainly not. Never a truer word spoken. Final question then, Curveball, one of our listeners. Will T20 terminate the test game? Is T20 set for global dominance, given its shorter time frame, pizzazz, the razzmatazz, the excitement, and the fact you can fit it into a convenient an afternoon or evening? What do you think?
I think, much as it pains me to say it, Patrick, I think it probably is. Test cricket is a slow burning format, quite a nuanced format. You can watch it for 3 days, not a lot seems to be happening, and then it will suddenly burst into life on the fourth afternoon. So, and as you rightly say, the T20 game has razzmatazz, a shorter time frame, seems to be more appropriate to the age in which we're living. And yet, the demise of Test cricket has been confidently predicted, as I've said earlier on, at various points over the last 100 years. And yet it does seem to stagger on. And I think for the players, generally it's the format that players still prize as the most kind of, as the supreme test for any player, if you like. The governing body of the game is now moving towards a World Test Championship. So it's a bit more kind of investment in a kind of in a structure that leads to a world champion that hasn't always been the case before. And I think one of the really interesting developments, Patrick, is how the T20 game is influencing Test cricket. If you look at some of the shots that are played in Test cricket now, the rate at which players score, almost the aggressive approach of players, it's totally different from the way Test cricket was played, let's say, in the 1940s and 1950s. Now, Test cricket in the 1950s, if you were scoring 2 runs or 3 runs and over, that was thought to be a pretty good rate of scoring. Now in a Test game, you quite often score 4 or 5 runs and over. And that's the influence of T20 cricket. So I'd like to feel that actually the two forms of the game can actually coexist going forward.
I certainly hope so, Rakesh, because Test cricket, the longer form of the county game, that really is my penchant. Rakesh, thank you so much for that tour de force on cricket. We really appreciate it. Now, there may well be listeners out there that want to get in contact with you, who have questions of their own, want to read some of your works. How do we get in touch with you, and how do we get hold of some of your work on cricket, Rakesh?
If you'd like to get in touch with me, my email address is rp@felsted.org, which is the school where I work. Please do feel free to drop me a line. And if you are interested, having a look at my ebook, in which I explore some of these issues in a bit more depth. Probably the easiest thing, Patrick, is for you, for any listeners, just to drop me a line at my email address, and I can give you the link to the book.
Fantastic, Rakesh. Well, on behalf of myself, on behalf of the co-editors, and on behalf of all the listeners, That was absolutely outstanding. Thank you so much, Rakesh Patel, for coming to join us today to talk all about the great game, cricket. Much appreciated.
Thanks for having me, Patrick.
All the best, Rakesh. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Versus History podcast. Visit us at www.versushistory.com and follow us at Versus History on Twitter and Instagram. You can download all episodes from iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or from wherever you get your podcasts.